Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr filling in for Steve Jones, who had to duck out of the Sunbury Motor Studio a little early due to a previous engagement, some baseball issues here at the end of the season and conflicts. But we have some great interviews coming up for you in the next hour, including a discussion with Charlie Kimball, who finished in the bottom at Sonoma yesterday in the IndyCar race, had a couple of issues early on, ended up getting down a lap, got that lap back early in the race, but just couldn't finish any higher. Of course, he is coming off of a win that we'll talk about in just a few minutes with Charlie, and also getting ready for a race this coming weekend in Baltimore, the Baltimore Grand Prix on the streets of Baltimore in Inner Harbor. Really great circuit. And again, that's coming up with Charlie Kimball in a moment. If you missed Bill O'Brien from the last hour, we'll do that for you one more time. And the assistant basketball coach at Penn State, Dwayne Anderson, joining us in the next half hour as well. As promised, Steve's conversation with Charlie Kimball.
Well, we're very pleased, by the way, to bring on Charlie Kimball, who is not only a winner on the IndyCar circuit, but also is symbolic and means so much to a specific community in this country, and that is the community of, and unfortunately, the ever-growing community of those who are diabetic. Charlie is type 1 diabetic and yet excels in a sport where you need all of your reactions and your senses. Charlie, welcome. It's great to have you with us. What does it mean to you that you do have that responsibility in your life to a very specific and special part of the community?
Well, it's an important part of my racing program. You know, having Novo Nordisk as a partner, the company that makes the insulin I use, the insulin delivery device, the Novolog Flex Pen, it's important for me to represent that diabetes community really well, on and off the track. And you know, for me, it's very fulfilling because I know that if I have a not a great weekend on the racetrack or a fantastic weekend on the racetrack, the fact that I'm out competing is a victory for so many people in that community. And hopefully I can inspire and encourage, you know, those people, especially young people, to continue to chase their dreams and live their passions, whatever that may be.
Charlie, when did you get the bug to get into racing?
Well, I grew up watching motorsports. My dad's a mechanical engineer and designed race cars, and I got into go-karts at the age of 9, got into a car the first time at the age of 16 when I got my driver's license, and at that point, I never looked back.
When were you diagnosed as being a type 1 diabetic?
Well, I was actually racing in Europe and had gone into the doctor with an unrelated skin rash, and he asked me a few other questions, and I mentioned an unquenchable thirst and had me jump on a scale, and in just 5 days, I'd lost 25 pounds, and at that point, he did some blood work and realized that my blood sugars were really elevated and diagnosed me with type 1 diabetes.
How do you regulate it the day of a race and then during the race?
Well, a lot of what I do comes down to the preparation before I get in the car, as far as managing my hydration, my nutrition, my blood glucose, using that Novolog Flex Pen, taking my insulin, so that when I'm in the car, hopefully things have gone to plan. All I have to think about is racing and hopefully winning. And I also have a couple of tools in the cockpit to keep track of it. I wear a continuous monitor that's plugged into the car's data system, so I can keep track of my blood sugar on the steering wheel just like I keep track of lap time and speed. And if I need some carbohydrates, I've got a second drink bottle mounted in the car full of orange juice.
Okay. How important are pit stops along the way for you, not just in terms of what they do for the car, but also if there's any moment where you need something extra?
If things go off track, so to speak, if you'll pardon the pun, mm-hmm. a pit stop's the opportunity to get some insulin or even get some carbohydrates, but in the car, alone anything during a pit stop, because as seconds, they don't want to take any extra time to make any adjustment to me as a driver.
In your career, give me the importance of getting hooked into the Ganassi racing team.
Oh, it's fantastic. Having teammates, champions as teammates, like Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti, right, has been invaluable. Even outside of the IndyCar stable, being a teammate to Scott Pruitt, Memo Rojas in the Grand Am program, and you know, Jamie McMurray and Juan Pablo Montoya, who we all worked together at the Rolex 24 at Daytona this year. So being able to learn from those guys who've won on so many different series, so many different continents, so many different types of racing has been fantastic in my engineering and or my development. And the engineering side is, I mean, it's second to none in any series, I think, in the world.
We're with Charlie Kimball, who is an IndyCar race driver. He certainly is the one who carries the banner for anyone who is diabetic that you can literally accomplish anything. We have a football player here at Penn State named John Urschel. And John is he's a genius in math. And everybody knows he's 3-0, you know, not 3-0, he's 4-0. He's never had anything less than an A. And everybody knows academically how strong he is. But the guy's a really good football player. He was first team all Big Ten. And at some point, we feel like we need to recognize the kind of football player that he is. Give me an importance for you personally that beyond the symbolism that goes with your disease, that people start just to recognize you for being a great driver.
Well, I think when the on-track results reflect the importance of the job I'm doing in the race car, then that story takes care of itself. The fact that I'm a racing driver first who happens to have diabetes, when I'm getting podiums, when I'm getting top five, when I'm getting a race win, those highlights take care of themselves. And so people focus on the fact that I'm a racing driver first, and yes, I overcome the challenge of having diabetes, and I speak to a great community and a great audience of people with diabetes, not just across the country, but around the world, and that's important. But the fact if I can get the job done on the racetrack, that's all that really matters.
In your everyday life, mentally, when did you feel you turned the corner where it became an accepted part for you and you get past the shock of it?
Well, it took me a good couple of weeks to deal with the diagnosis. There were some pretty dark days there, and to be able to come out the other side and stronger, and I think a better athlete because of diabetes rather than despite it, because I'm more aware of my body. I do a better job in preparation. I have a better understanding nutritionally, a better understanding of the fact that I get to do something I love for work. I get to drive race cars for a living, and I'm really grateful and appreciative of that. So when I get into the car, I enjoy it, and it's that much sweeter than it's ever been.
Yeah. I'm type 2, by the way, just for full disclosure, so it's not quite in the same ballpark as you are, but I still have the same thought process that you have to have. On an everyday basis.
Exactly. And I think one of the things for me, being the son of an engineer, mentally I was prepared well for managing diabetes because, you know, I'm very linear. I'm very methodical in not just how I drive a race car, but also how I manage my health. And so that I think that has given me an extra edge and an ability to manage diabetes well enough to be able to continue to compete day in, day out, and go hammer and tong with guys, 32 other drivers, the Indy 500 or the Baltimore Grand Prix coming up next week.
Right.
And race hard for a full three and a half hours.
One final question for you. Tony Stewart on the NASCAR circuit, as we know, in a non-circuit race, and he's done this his entire career. I know it in Sealands Grove here in Pennsylvania. He just shows up on a Friday night, and there he is. What is the stance of IndyCar, your personal stance, and also Ganassi, on you doing anything other than the Indy Series?
Well, at the moment, I'm very busy. I'm very focused on the IndyCar side of things. So the opportunity to do other races just doesn't fit in the schedule at the moment. I'm so committed to continuing to get to a point where I'm successful in the IndyCar Series and continually successful, continually podiuming and getting race wins. So At this moment in time, I'm really focused on that. And as far as Ganassi Racing is concerned, he's Chip's very very committed to having successful drivers in the IndyCar Series. And so we try and avoid, as a team, distractions from other racing. Obviously, the Rolex 24 at Daytona is a different a kettle of fish because we're racing for Chip there in right. team cars. And with it being a 24-hour race, it's important to have four very strong drivers in each car. And personally, I know Tony's caught flack and gotten a lot of support, you know, both sides of the coin. But at the end of the day, everybody involved with him, his partners, his team, himself, they know he's a racer and he's grown up his whole life racing whatever he can, whenever he can. And as drivers, we're competitors. And if we're not competing in a NASCAR or an IndyCar or anything like that, we want to be competing somewhere because that's how we feel fulfilled and how we feel alive. And so I think everybody knew what they were getting into. And I wish him the best because I broke my hand last year. And it's very hard to watch somebody else drive your race car or the car you're supposed to be in. And so I hope he can recover completely and as quickly as possible.
Charlie, for us, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. We found it to be illuminating as to what you talked about and how you've really inspired an entire community by what you're doing on an everyday basis at a high level. And hopefully we cross paths again, maybe before Indy or obviously when you come here to Pocono.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a great result at Pocono this year as part of a Ganassi podium sweep. And I look forward to getting back there next year. And you know, don't forget, it's not too much of a hike out to the Baltimore Grand Prix.
That's right.
Next weekend on Labor Day weekend. We race Sunday afternoon, and it'll be live on the NBC Sports Network as well.
Yeah, it's only about 150 miles from here, so I think we can get some people down there for you.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, guys.
Charlie Kimball, thank you so much. Appreciate it. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr filling in for Steve in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show sponsored by Purdy Insurance. You'll find them on Market Street in Sunbury. You can find out what they can do for you online, purdyinsurance.com. That's one way to contact them. And, of course, you can visit them, Market Street in Sunbury, and find out how they can help you out and save a few bucks in the process. If you missed Coach Bill O'Brien's conversation with Steve Jones last hour, don't worry. Not only do we have it on the podcast for you, we'll also have it coming up right now. Here's Steve with Coach Bill O'Brien talking about the upcoming game this weekend with Syracuse and the question marks at quarterback for, well, both teams, more or less.
Bill, you've gone through this, and you've repeatedly told us the quarterbacks are even. Now, from a play caller's point of view, have they been able to grasp things in such a way where you're going to feel like you have a lot of freedom with either one to really dial up almost anything you want?
No question. Steve, these two guys have come in here, and they've studied the game. They've done a nice job in practice of getting us out of a bad play and into a good play. They've made their share of mistakes like all young quarterbacks do, but I've been very impressed with their mental capacity. I would say especially Christian Hackenberg, who just got here. He's been here now. I think this will be the 20th practice today. And here's a guy that just come in here and really studied the game hard, and he's got great poise, and Tyler's done a nice job too. So we've got two good young quarterbacks, and you know, again, the issue there is they're 18, they're 19 years old. There'll be 80,000 fans in the stands. It's a different deal, and we've got to do a good job as a coaching staff of calming them down in the game and helping them with the game.
You mentioned as a coaching staff calming them down, there's also a veteran presence around them. How much will they help in terms of making them better?
Yeah, I think our veteran presence around them is great for those young guys. You know, you've got guys, you know, Allen Robinson, Mosby Felder at receiver. You've got the tight ends, the three tight ends that have played a ton of football for us. You got an offensive line that, for the most part, is a veteran offensive line. You know, so you've got guys at every position, the running backs, which is a quarterback's best friend. So, you know, you've got guys at every position that'll help these guys as the game goes on.
You mentioned three veteran tight ends. There were four, but one moved to offensive tackle. How difficult a transition is that? Because you're getting hit on every play.
Yeah, that's a very difficult transition. You know, you just said it. You go from releasing into pass routes once in a while to, you know, like I say, about 80 car crashes per day. And, you know, you're contact on every play. You have contact on every play. And he's done a good job. Gary's done a really good job of improving every day. I give that guy a lot of credit. I have so much respect for Gary Gilliam. You know, I wish he was here for the next 4 or 5 years because, you know, he's a guy that has improved every day. He comes to work every day with a smile on his face. He's coachable, and he's going to play a lot of football for us this year.
Defensively, what kind of tone have they been able to set?
It's been a good tone with the first team defense, Steve. These guys they're a tough defense. You know, we've got to stay healthy. You know, if we don't stay healthy, that's where we have a problem. But I think if we can come out and stay healthy and play good and play a normal Penn State tough defense, that's what we're going to do. And these guys have had a good training camp.
You reorganize special teams in terms of how it's coached. Proof will be in the pudding when you play Syracuse. But have you liked what you've seen so far in that organization?
Yeah, we tried to consolidate. We had a lot of voices last year, and we tried to just take two guys, Ron Vanderlinden and Charles London, and put those guys in charge. And Ron has both punt teams, and Charles has both kickoff teams. So, you know, we feel like that's gone really well. Those guys work well together. The kids have done a nice job of buying into what we're trying to do, and now we got to go out there, like you said, we got to go out there and do it.
What would you like to button down between now and game week?
The game plan. You know, what exactly are we going to do against Syracuse? I think we have a really good idea on both sides of the ball. But just now, we started it a little bit yesterday. Today, we started again. That's why I've closed down practice to everybody, because we just want to focus on the game plan and what we have to do to make sure that we're ready to go on Saturday.
And for you, when you look at this camp and the tone of the camp, do you like the foundation you've set?
I do. I really, like I've said from day one, I've been very fortunate to come into a situation. You know, we had some issues early on here when I first got here, but the guys that are here right now that are on this football team are just fantastic guys, Steve. I mean, you can't look at one guy and say, you know what, that guy's a you-know-what. You know, these kids, I mean, from top to bottom, they're the best kids I've ever been around. We've got good chemistry here. And now we just have to go out there and play well. And as a coach, we've got to call a good game. John Butler's got to call a good game on defense. And hopefully we stay healthy and we'll have a competitive team.
Bill, thanks.
You got it.
That, of course, Coach Bill O'Brien with Steve Jones here on the Steve Jones Show. We'll have more with Coach O'Brien, I'm sure, coming up later on this week as we get closer to that Syracuse opener that you can hear right here on WKOK, the tailgate show starting at 2, kickoff at 3:30. Again, that's Saturday here on WKOK. We'll have more with Steve and Bill as the week goes on and talk a little bit more about that Syracuse quarterback situation. Two different types of quarterbacks, one that's mobile, one that's kind of a pocket guy, and boy, that can make it a real challenge for a defensive coordinator to get ready for a big game, especially an opening game under high-profile situation, as the game in East Rutherford will no doubt be. Friday night, high school football getting underway. It'll be some of the games you'll hear on the stations of Sunbury Broadcasting include Milton, playing host to Danville. Ironmen looking for another District 4 Heartland Conference title and a District 4 title to boot in AA. They'll have to beat a solid Milton team that had a really good 7-on-7 summer. Coach Goodwin's done a great job with the Milton Black Panthers. Fell one game short of a district championship now for 2 years in a row. And matter of fact, one play short a couple of years ago against Shamokin. They have a veteran at quarterback. They'll be a veteran at running back, but they'll have lost a lot of receiving yards, especially at that tight end position. We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. And Danville, although they're not huge all the way around, they have a lot of returning starters from a year ago. And they've solid running back, skill positions back with receiver and quarterback. Defensively is going to be the question for the Danville Ironmen. We'll see how good that 3-5 defense is. Shikellamy here on WKOK will take on the Mount Carmel Red Tornadoes. That is always a big test between those two teams. Shikellamy under second-year coach at Shikellamy, Todd Tilford, calmed down a little bit more this year than he was last year. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It was a hectic start to the year, instituting an offense, instituting a defense. Well, now everybody's kind of comfortable with that. He has some key starters back. basically for Shikellamy, as I've said before, it's going to start and end with that offensive line. If that offensive line becomes solid, this could be a very difficult Shikellamy team to stop. Mal Carmel has a few key starters back as well. And you know Coach Carmen DeFrancesco always does a great job with that football team. We'll have Selinsgrove Grove football on Eagle 107 again this year and Lewisburg football on 100.9 The Valley. You can see all those schedules online. You can link up with our sister stations again online at WKOK.com, and you can see the football schedules there as well. And while you're visiting WKOK.com, don't forget about clicking on the sports schedule for WKOK. That includes Penn State football and Shikellamy football as well. Coming up in the next half hour, Dwayne Anderson, the new assistant basketball coach for the Penn State Nittany Lions. That's coming up after the news here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr filling in for Steve, who had a change of plans here. We had open phones scheduled for the afternoon, but had a baseball conflict to come up at the last minute. So you're stuck with me in the Sunbury Motors Studio, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our sponsor today, Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. You can find them online at purdyinsurance.com. Coming up, Joe Susan of the Bucknell Bison. But right now, Steve's conversation with the new assistant basketball coach at Penn State, Dwayne Anderson.
Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15. Hummel's Wharf. Joining us in the Sunbury Motors Studio is assistant coach Dwayne Anderson of the Nittany Lion basketball team. Coach, welcome. It's great to have you on board.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure for having me.
Let's talk about Europe. You're eminently familiar with it, as you were explaining to us before. But how, you know, in a team coming together, and there are a lot of new faces here, the freshmen and Allen Roberts and so forth. How did you like the chemistry in the team on the court when they were finally out there together?
On the court, it was great to see, being that I'm a player, so I'm kind of, you know, still in the player mindset, trying to transition to being a coach. But it was great to see the guys just trying to play together as much as possible, and they just, you know, came together.
The next part is a lot of people want to know about Tim Frazier. Now, you, of course, would only see Tim Frazier from tape from a couple of years ago, but what does the 2013 version of Tim Frazier look like to you?
The 2013 Tim Frazier is the Tim Frazier that you guys, you know, know over the years, and he's a heck of a player.
I want to ask you now about a couple of the freshmen, Thorpe, Woodward. People would like to know a little bit more about them. What kind of game do they bring to the table that, as the former player now turned coach, likes?
Thorpe and Woodward, they're both very scrappy players, and that's the type of player I am. I want to go get on the floor for the loose balls. I want to, you know, mix it up a little bit in the paint, and, you know, also on the wing area. And both those guys, they're not afraid to mix it up with the big guys. So they bring a very competitive edge to Penn State basketball.
What is it like for you going from Patrick Chambers' assistant coach to now being a Patrick Chambers assistant coach? Because he was your assistant at Nova at one point.
So. Oh, man. It's great for me because he's always been like family to me. Yeah. And we stayed in contact over the years, and he always told me that I would, you know, he's going to hire me one day. I'm just thinking he's just saying that.
Yeah.
And now it's interesting, you know, being on the coaching side of the business, and I enjoy coming to work every day to work with him, and he's teaching me a lot of things. So, you know, I'm ready for the journey.
In your journey, you wanted to play pro ball, and you did so in Europe. Mm-hmm. And some people can carve out a long career, Glenn Secunda being one who lives around here. You know, Joe Crispin still trying to carve out a career in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, though, about the coaching part that said, you know what, maybe it's time to shelve the playing career. Let's go in this direction.
To be quite honest, I mean, it's the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably going to be one of the best conference next year. It's something I always wanted to do. And me and my wife, we just said, you know what, why not come into business now? I know I'm kind of early. I'm in my prime basketball wise.
Right.
To come in this business with someone that I know very well, Coach Chambers, he's family. There's no other better situation to me.
Because you are so recently removed from a player, can you relate to the current players right away in terms of how they think and what their mindset is, because you are so close to being removed from it?
Man, it's very familiar because, you know, I could still get on the court and, you know, play with the guys. And, you know, they're not going to – it's not going to be easy if you play one-on-one or whatever. But, you know, I've been there, done that. Everything they're about to go through as far as, you know, hitting that wall, comes practice, trying to manage school. I've been there, done that. So,
yeah. What your impressions of DJ Newbill right away? Philly guy.
He definitely has that Philly swagger that everyone that everyone has been talking about, and that's why, you know, Coach Chambers will make a great addition to this, you know, Happy Valley. It's that Philly swagger, and DJ definitely has that way about him, and he wants to be a winner.
You've been taught. Now, how does it feel on your end to become the teacher?
It's definitely a learning experience because I kind of see it from both sides. And I know, you know, what it takes to, you know, get things done on the court. So that's how I want to teach is, you know, I'm going to teach how I've, you know, experienced things when I was playing.
When you played for Jay Wright, what are some things that you picked up from Jay along the way as an example, along with the example Patrick sets, mm-hmm. that you feel they are comfortable in your coaching style?
They both have this one word that we, you know, we really believe in. It's a very powerful word. It's called attitude. There's a lot of things that you can't control in life, but you can control your attitude. And that's something that Coach Chambers and Coach Wright both have installed in me. And that's how I live every day. Attitude is how we, you know, we're going to get things done. And that's what we want to bring to Happy Valley.
Playing in Europe, I'm sure it had to be a great experience for you. And you mentioned you're in the prime of your career. If you wanted to keep going, you could go for several more years if you want. But you wanted to do this. What's it like, though, now to have an opportunity to put roots down here in the States and not have to go year to year in Europe?
It's definitely it's not so much stress anymore. I mean, I love playing. Don't get me wrong.
No, sure.
But yeah. You know, being in the States where you can go to, you know, McDonald's when you want or certain restaurants. I mean, you have McDonald's. It's just different. Yeah. And it's, you know, this American air that I can breathe every day is definitely something that I enjoy.
Yeah. You mentioned the enjoyment of going to work every day. What is it about this job? You mentioned Patrick, but what is it about this job that just in a short period of time confirmed that you made the right decision?
I think being around the guys that want to win. And I mean, like I said, it's the Big Ten. Like coming to Penn State, you know, I went to Villanova, which is a small school. But just seeing the campus here is just like, how can you say no to, you know, coming, being a part of tradition? That's something that we're trying to build.
Yeah, plus that's the Jordan Center, not the Ski Lodge.
Very true, very true.
I actually did a game, and I think I've done a couple games in the Lodge in my career, but I went past it a couple times when I was covering the U.S. Open. I'm thinking, God, it looks like the Mouse House, the old that you used to go and buy cheese from. give me the importance of the European Tour from your point of view. In terms of learning the players, learning how Patrick wants to coach, and then being on a different spot on the bench with, even though it was a golf shirt, but eventually with a jacket and tie on as opposed to a uniform. How important was that part for you in Europe?
For me, it was very interesting for me to, you know, now that I'm a coach, sometimes I look at coach and see if he's going to, you know, put me in the game.
I'd be tempted because he's always looking at me at ways to get me out of the building.
So that was a learning experience for me. And then it was also good for, you know, some younger guys to play, you know, how coach wants them to play. It was great for Tim Frazier to come back. That's his first game in, you know, 9 months. And it looked like he, you know, he's still not – the Tim Frazier, but he'll be that very soon. Like it's special. It's a special thing to watch him play.
Yeah, no question. He has a chance to be a first team All Big Ten player for the second time in his career.
Knock on wood. Yes,
yeah. Knock on wood. He has that chance. He has a chance to do that. Now between now and when camp actually gets going, the last week of September, what will the schedule be like for this basketball team?
We're gonna get after it on the basketball floor for sure. When we have practices, when we have individuals, school is about to start. So getting some guys here on campus, and it's go time. I'm ready to play and practice right now. So hopefully I think these guys feel the same way. So we just can't wait to get started.
You've been recruited
now you have to recruit. Give me your comfort level with that, because it'll be the first few times out for you to do that. You've been on the receiving end of what it feels like, obviously. But that part about recruiting, and what are some of the messages that they want you to get out when you actually sit down and you want to talk to a coach or talk to a player?
You know, being the recruiter now, it's, you know, just relating to parents and kids. Like, I know what they're about to experience when they go to college, as far as, you know, going to school, managing, you know, practice and academics. So that's something that I bring to the table. And, you know, I've been to, you know, the Final Four when I played. So that's something that I can share. You know, I'm not going to guarantee we're going to get to that point, but I do know what it takes to get to that point. And that's something that I share when I speak with parents and some players.
Yeah, because Patrick Chambers was an important part of that journey, and there's, and you know how it feels to get through something like that with him.
Man, I'm talking about so many meetings in the gym, countless hours, me and him just getting up shots. I remember, you know, we used to shoot before every game.
Yeah.
And it was amazing that we finally got to experience that together. And now here we are again trying to, you know, build tradition here and hopefully get back to that one day.
It's a different school in some ways, but academics is very important at Villanova. Different school in some ways. But you were recruited, I'm going to guess, what, 8 years ago? Be like 2005 maybe? When you were recruited?
A little bit before that, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What worked? What was their pitch to you that worked for you and worked for your family that was the key that said, Villanova's my school?
For me, Coach Wright said that he wanted me, you know, he wanted to help me be a great player and a great man. So that to me meant a lot. I didn't understand what he meant, but, you know, a lot of other coaches, you know, said some things, but he really stood out to me. And, you know, Coach Chambers was a part of that recruiting process. And, I mean, we just mix well together.
When you're 17 or 18, you don't know what anybody means at that point. I mean, really, you really don't. If you knew then what you knew now, that's an interesting question.
I know everyone could say that in life. If I knew, man, it took me 2 years in order to play at Villanova. I played my junior year, and that's when we started to turn things around. We lost 5 games, and, you know, it was the biggest thing in Philadelphia. So I think that I would have started playing, you know, earlier in my career.
Because there was a player here, obviously, before your time. Well, with me, it's before anybody's time. Bruce Blake. I remember Bruce Parkhill said to me, he said, after 2 years, when he gets to be a junior, this guy's going to be a real player. And you know what? He was absolutely right. When he got to be a junior, he became a real player. It just took him a little bit to get himself conditioning and into the flow and a change. Because how big a jump is it from high school to college in terms of the speed of the game and so forth that you can relate to when a player may be struggling a bit?
The speed is something that you can't really prepare for. I mean, you could do sprints, but when you're playing against, on the road, playing against Indiana, playing against Ohio State, like it's a whole nother ball field. So that's something that I could hopefully bring to younger guys to understand at an early age.
Yeah, because you can't describe the footwork and quickness of Aaron Kraft defensively until you actually see Aaron Kraft defensively in front of you.
Exactly. And then I think what I bring is, you know, just be prepared mentally, like, because you're going to come to points in the game where it's like, wow, like, this is crazy. Like, this is what I have to go up against, but that's how I'm built. Like, I'm ready for, you know, whoever's in my way. And that's how I want to pass along to these Penn State young guys that's stepping on the floor.
Dwayne, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. It'll be a privilege for me to work with you over the next few years. And thanks so much for being here today.
Man, thank you for having me. And I'm looking forward to plenty of more interviews and, and coming here more often.
You can tell he's a rookie, but he says something like that at the end. Nobody ever says that. Dwayne Anderson, the assistant basketball coach of the Nittany Lions. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
At Sunbury Motors, the rewards are many. And the regrets? Well, the regrets just don't happen. That's because no matter what vehicle you buy from Sunbury Motor Company, you are guaranteed to be satisfied. Not only when you first get that new or used car, truck, or SUV, but when you have your vehicle serviced, you'll always have the best experience possible from start to finish. Talk about variety being the spice of life? Well, at Sunbury Motor Company, you have the luxury of choosing from all the best brands like Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln. Each and every vehicle comes with awesome service and financing plans that fit your budget and are super easy to afford. You can even submit a financing application online and calculate the value of your trade-in. Ask about Sunbury Motors Tire Rewards Program. Service, parts, body shop, and quick lane too. New or used, the best vehicles come from Sunbury Motor Company. Visit sunburymotors.com to see all their new and used inventory and visit the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury or Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Hur filling in for Steve and bringing you the interview we had last week with the Bucknell Bison head coach, Joe Susan.
Joe, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with you about football and about how Bucknell is doing at this particular time. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here and a welcome break during preseason.
Good. Let's talk about your preseason to this point. Do you feel that you've started to lay a proper foundation for what will be an interesting 2013 season?
I certainly do. We were fortunate that our kids understood how important the summer was, and they came back as a team in very good shape, which is really enables you to cater your preseason more towards preparation than towards conditioning. Obviously, you want to get them into game shape, but you don't have to spend a lot of time getting them into aerobic or anaerobic shape. Actually, it's more anaerobic shape. And they came back strong. We came back fairly healthy, which is good. And I told them that after day one, no team in America is 100% healthy, and it just works that way. It's just you got to try to minimize the bumps and bruises, but in a collision game, you're going to have those. And the good thing is that we've developed some depth that enable us to have some flexibility at a variety of positions. And if somebody goes down, we're not in a position where we're looking around. We're in a position where we have depth that is quality depth and put the next guy on the field.
I want to ask you about that depth part. How has that translated into far more competitive practices because of depth?
You know, it's something I tell the kids every day. If you like where you are on the depth chart, do what it takes to stay there. If you don't, change it. And when there have been periods in my career and when we got here where there wasn't any competition for positions, and it made the guys that were starters, and it's the nature of the human animal that you can run towards complacency, and now if somebody's breathing down your neck, you better be right. And it really helps us in that we're in a position in a variety of position groups where we can play multiple people. It helps us because our offensive attack has multiple personnel groups. On our defensive front, we like to play as many kids as we can to keep them fresh. And then it enables you to counter an offensive team in the secondary with combinations of nickel, dime, and there's more kids that we feel very comfortable about putting on the field and really being able to play the game in an effective manner. And it keeps a lot more kids happy in that I'm not into keeping them happy. All right, I'm going to prepare them to win, but they've done a very good job. And you know, we've had our preseason injuries. It's the nature of the beast, and the younger guys have really come on.
Joe, one of the items that you talked to with Kevin, you've talked to with me, is that one of the keys for your program happen to be birthdays, getting older. Has that now started to make a difference for you?
It certainly has, especially in the offensive line. When we first got here, The offensive line was built for a double slot option team, so they didn't have a great deal of size in the offensive line. And the group that we have on the field will have – it's actually one true freshman, and when you see him, you'll understand why. And juniors across the board, one sophomore at the right tackle. So we'll have a freshman at the left tackle, a sophomore at the right tackle, but those birthdays have really – other than the left tackle, those kids have played a lot of football here. And I think that in an offensive line particularly, the concept of playing together really helps. Obviously, Brandon Wesley comes back for his fourth year. He had a great spring. He carried it into preseason and has done a great job. And his backup, Trey Loletta, has really had a very good preseason. And then we have a youngster on the team named R.J. Nitty who has a cannon. And sometimes he lines up under the guard, which is the nature of any freshman quarterback. We just slide him over a little bit and say it might be opportunistic for you to line up under the center. But, it's a live group of kids with a lot of experience on the field. And then the young men we brought in as freshmen really going to add to this program, and you'll see them on the field on Saturdays.
Give me an idea. We know what Penn State's situation is and how Bill O'Brien has handled hitting. A lot of pass thuds and so forth, a lot of stuff above the waist. But you're seeing more and more teams nationally actually do that, and you're seeing more and more NFL teams actually taper down in the amount of hitting. How much hitting do you like to do in the preseason, Joe?
Yeah, we model our preseason off the NFL model. I was fortunate to spend some time talking to Greg Schiano about it at the Tampa Bay Bucks, and they don't have any doubles, nor do we. And we're smart about when we have our live periods, and a lot of what we do is above the waist. I think that helps us. And the kids have gotten better with it our first year here when we went thud. There would wind up being 21 guys on the ground. And the more you can keep kids playing on their feet, number one, it's a reflection of their athleticism. Number two, they understand that you have to limit the amount of full contact. We had a major scrimmage this morning, and we go into the mindset now of going back. Tomorrow will be primarily a thud day. Saturday will be what we call a tag day. We go out in spiders and more just running. Then we have a decision to make on Sunday because we did have a couple of minor injuries today where whether or not we do any scrimmaging at all, we have a scrimmage set for Sunday. But a lot of it is just going through the pregame operation so the kids get used to it. And we're going to spend some time as a staff to decide whether or not we actually do scrimmage, and if we do, how much we do. But you've got to have a team on the field on Sundays, and I think the philosophy overall in the game has changed. That if you feel comfortable about your team's ability to block and tackle, and I think one of the things where you saw, I know the Eagles – didn't tackle at all in preseason. Then they played the Patriots, and they couldn't tackle anybody. And, that's an extreme, and I know Chip very well, and I'm sure that he'll get them tackling, believe me. But it's a fine line. It really is. The preparation that these kids put into it over the summer, they're more prepared for preseason. And, they have those cumulative reps in the spring. But we're still going to spend time blocking and tackling. It's just you want them there on Saturdays so that the right guys are on the field.
Joe, as you know, it's always an absolute pleasure for me to sit down and talk football with you. Thanks a lot for taking a little time out from what's been a busy preseason to spend a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Steve. I know you've trying to avoid Kevin, and I think you've done a great job with that.
You're not going to be able to, though, very soon. You know that.
Joe Susan of the Bucknell Bison. Steve Jones Show opening the phone lines tomorrow and pretty much the rest of the week as well. Can talk Penn State football, can talk a little high school football, or maybe if you want to chat about the NFL or Major League Baseball. Your call the next couple days here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can also find us online, stevejonesshow.com, Steve Jones Show on Facebook, and at Steve Jones PSU for Twitter as well. News is coming up next. Talk to you tomorrow.